council come to order. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. All right. This is the second reading of four items on the agenda. And Sue, would you read the titles of all four items? We'll vote on them separately and we'll have some discussion before we vote. But let's go ahead and get items S-527, 573, 574, and 575 on the table.
572. Revised residential solid waste and recycling collection rates and commercial solid waste tonnage fees effective July 1, 2012.
And could I have Susan Anderson and her team to come up to answer questions or do council questions of staff for each one of those? So appreciate council that's emailed a series of questions to Susan. Do you have those in front of you to go through?
So the first one,
what are the rate projections given the potential extension of the Clean Fleet Program deadline?
The rate projections this year, as we've already indicated, that the cost will go up by 90 cents, and that we are proposing to push out the implementation date. We will bring something in the beginning of June to do that out to 2016. And the result of doing that will be that the rate will still be 90 cents for this year, 90 cents per month per household, but that it will be between 30 and 70 cents in the outgoing years, and then that charge will end until they buy new trucks again. The trucks last about 12 years.
And what percentage of the fleet then with this approach would be converted to the cleaner, more efficient trucks?
All of them when we're done.
Okay. Yeah. And that was Commissioner Fish's question. Any follow-up questions for you, Commissioner Fish, or anybody else on that one issue? And then I'm going to talk about the different rate increase question you asked.
I have a couple of follow-up questions on that. Thank you. Did we start paying this increased fee last year as well?
Yes. Last year there was about 50 cents in the rate.
And why was it 50 cents this year and 90 cents? 50 cents last year and 90 cents this year.
Because more trucks were purchased. If we ran the utility, we could decide when we're going to buy the trucks. But this is run by private companies, and we gave them, you know, several years to do the work, and they're buying them on schedule when they're buying them.
And the deal is that we said we would help buy the cleaner trucks. Do we always buy the trucks?
Yes.
So they don't have to pay for the trucks out of their profits?
They do pay for them. They're an allowable expense. Just like fuel, just like personnel, just like everything else that it takes to run the service that they provide to us. It's part of the cost of service.
So the customers are paying for the increased high mileage trucks or cleaner burning trucks?
The customers are paying for the cleaner burning trucks. They're paying for everything that goes into the cost of service for providing the service.
Thank you.
The second question from Commissioner Fish was, why is the proposed rate increase different for the different customers?
So the way we calculate the rate is cost of service, and that's something that's for all of the rates. So what we've done is, since the beginning of the franchise system, we have provided incentives for smaller cans and disincentives for larger cans. In the current rate that's in front of you, there is a $2.49 incentive for every 4 weeks and for the mini cans, and that's about a 10% incentive. The proposed disincentive is on the 60-gallon can and 90-gallon can, and it's $4.80 for the 60-gallon and $7.10 for the 90. So every year we've done this for 20 years, and we've set it at $2.49 this year. We can set it at a different number. And we can move that around, but that's been about the same rate over the years.
And then, did you have any follow-up? Anybody else follow-up on that issue? And then,
I guess that's just kind of a follow-up. And I forgot to ask this last week, but I know that we were contacted by some people who are monthly garbage.
Every 4 weeks, yeah.
Every 4 weeks, and they were saying that their rate increase is the largest, like 9.5%. And I guess.
Well, $2. Part of it is that if you have a smaller number, this is the fun of math. If you have a smaller number and you take $2.49 in it, it's a larger percentage. So part of it is a numbers game, and so all of the smaller cans, mini cans, and the every 4 week service, those who are getting less than the average service are all getting the same incentive.
And by incentive, you mean a difference?
The $2.49 reduction of what the cost of service would be to service them. And I think part of the thing that's confusing to people, because it's not intuitive, is that, you know, now every 4 weeks, you actually have 10 cans being picked up. You know, you have green waste being picked up four times. And then you have recycling being picked up four times, and you have garbage basically being picked up twice or once if you're every 4 weeks. So the impact of the garbage is a very small percentage now, we call it garbage service, of what the service actually is. So that's part of it. And then the other part is just that the actual tipping and the amount of garbage that's tipped, again, is a small percentage of the total cost because there's fuel and, you know, there's all of the, unfortunately, the cost of service is the transport, not the amount that's actually tipped. So it doesn't make sense to us intuitively because we think of it as garbage service, but it's a whole lot more than that.
And for those that might be new to the room where we have more press here than we had in the first discussion, can you just go through how the new service standard that you just described, some of the results of that in terms of our goals and how much it has actually saved in what otherwise would have been a higher requested rate increase. Do you remember those numbers?
Sure, generally. Garbage, we've done a comparison of January, February, March of this year, the first quarter, full quarter that we had in service until last year. Garbage is down 44%. So there's been a reduction. People are composting a whole lot more, obviously, and they are recycling more. When we looked at during the cost of service that the PERB actually approved, you know, how we did this, the raise, fuel and labor costs were up, investments in the trucks caused an increase in rates, and the Metro Solid Waste tip fee, those things all caused upward pressure on rates. But the hauler efficiency due to the new program, due to having efficiencies in terms of less waste tipped at the landfill and instead going for yard debris actually caused a 79-cent reduction in, you know, kind of downward pressure on rates. So if we had the old system the way we used to have it, we really would have had $1.99 instead of $1.20. That's confusing, but.
Any further council discussion on this issue? All right.
The average rate increase again is how much?
Dollar-wise?
The average
on the 32 to 38, depending on what kind of can you have, is 4.2%.
All right, thank you. You'll stick around, right?
Yep.
All right, let's now have Steph come up from the Bureau of Environmental Services. We'll turn to you. Does anyone have any questions for? Does anyone have any questions on the sewer rate issues? I don't think I flagged for your staff, so Mike Marshall. All right, we can get staff upstairs if you know. Okay. Then could we have the staff from the Water Bureau please come up? And while they're making their way to the table, Commissioner Leonard and I have been talking about following up on the earlier exchange on rates, and I would propose for council consideration after consulting with others and him that we reduce the requested rate increase by a half of percentage point. So that's what I'll be proposing. So David, can you, since we last met, maybe you could start by talking about developments since we last met at the state and how that...
Point of order, Mr. Mayor!
Sir, you will sit down.
Point of order!
Be removed.
Mr. Mayor!
Please remove him. You're going to be removed.
Are you going to let him speak today?
You're doing everything possible to make sure...
You are out of order! Are we going to speak today?
Please remove him.
Yes or no?
Remove him.
Are we going to speak?
Remove.
No, I will not go.
Let him stay, guys. He's a veteran.
You have to sit there and...
I want to speak!
You have to wait.
To talk under the Constitution of the United States!
Sir, the first thing we do with every one of these is get our questions answered from staff.
Will you
I will get to you when it's
I'm
time to discuss.
You the question, sir!
Sir, you are out of order, and I'm not answering your question until it is time, and it will be time after we hear from the Bureau. So please sit down, or I'll have you removed.
Thank you, Mayor.
All right, so since last we met, there was a decision on the state level.
Thank you, Joe.
And what sort of impact does that have, in your mind, on water rates, water costs?
It won't have any impact on...
And by the way, just so that no one is surprised, I understand this is a contentious issue, but this is an issue that we have to make a decision on, and we will do it in the normal course of doing things. Anybody else who has some outburst that prevents for the basic exchange of information, I will just have you removed, okay? We will get to all the questions. That includes you. Now, can you answer our question?
Sure. It won't have any impact on the rate ordinance that you're considering today. It will have an impact on what we refer to as the out years, the next 5 years beyond. What occurred last week is that the Oregon Health Authority denied our request to extend our reservoir compliance schedule for coming into compliance with what's called LT2. What that means is that we will have to move forward with our original compliance schedule that was agreed to in 2009 that has us beginning construction on the Kelly Butte tank. That will be July 1, 2012. We'll move some things out of the CIP in order to be able to at least begin the construction in July. But the impact will primarily be in 2013, 14, 14, 15, where we're putting those projects, Kelly Butte and the Washington Park projects, back into the five-year CIP.
So, Mayor, if I could, David, you've explained in before to us that there is a queue of some other projects in the CIP that if you had the resources, you'd get to. We're essentially now putting this back in and bumping.
And we're backing those out.
Do we have a document that we can update that sort of shows what's in the queue and how that might affect what the five-year forecast is with this in and then sort of our menu of options in future years?
Yes.
Thank you.
And what about the opportunities to continue to push out the requirement or delay the requirement for covering the reservoirs?
Well, I would say that is now in the hands of the congressional delegation. From the standpoint of we have an enforceable compliance deadline with OHA. And with the EPA behind them, so I think the only option at this point is continue to push through the delegation and with the EPA on the review, that six-year review of the rule LT2, and with our congressional delegation.
Mayor, I request that we have a work session to discuss this issue, both to look at the issues that Commissioner Fish just raised, and also to brainstorm about what else might be done to.
Other questions or discussion from council?
A couple questions.
Yes, sir.
So, we had a pretty robust exchange last week about vacancies, and the Bureau has
40 to 50 vacancies.
34.
34. And I was pointing out, as a matter of equity, in the mayor's proposed budget, most of the bureaus have the vacancies eliminated, such as the Bureau of Environmental Services. So where is this additional half percent? How is it being achieved? And is it being achieved through reduction in vacancies?
Yes. In addition to the two positions we're already eliminating, they're filled. I'll be eliminating an additional 8 positions. And I can identify them for you if you
want. No, you don't have to, but
yes.
I mean, maybe I have something for that.
I mean, I can tell you, so I know what they are.
Okay.
Okay, before we move to questions about I think where transportation is next. Are there any additional council questions on this? All right. Can we have PBOC come up? One of the things I wanted to make clear in the PBOC rates is council policy and audit direction for full cost recovery for services that are provided, especially if they're provided to one set of partners but are not necessarily available to others. And one thing I want to note is the increase in the parking permit fees, which are mostly, the parking permit districts are mostly in the West Hills, the west side of the river, and we've been subsidizing them by about 50%, and so this is gets us closer to full cost recovery at about 87-88%, more or less. Are there other questions?
Mayor, I have a question if I could.
Yep.
Alyssa, the flags are still at half mast in the Portland Housing Bureau. Tom, you and I had a conversation last week about a hypothetical, and it was if the council chooses not to go forward with the Northwest Parking Plan, or if there aren't the votes for it, or whatever the scenario, it's the mayor's decision when bring it. I understand that over the next 5 years, at the back end, you would have a deficit if the plan was not implemented. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And if the council doesn't affirmatively act to adopt the Northwest Parking Plan, what's PBOC's plan to address that deficit?
Commissioner, we would need to bring, I would propose to bring for your consideration, for council's consideration, that's to true up the 5-year forecast in the fall budget.
So it would come from within the Bureau?
It would have to, from based on our ability to true up, which of course is our financial responsibility, our fiduciary obligation to you all. Yes, it would come from within the Bureau.
Thank you. Other questions for PBOC? All right. Thank you. How many people would like to make a comment on any of the 4 rate increases? Raise your hand. All right. I'm going to give, we normally don't take testimony on the second readings, but I am going to allow that today.
Thank you.
Because, you're welcome. So if you would, we're going to go row by row. So first row across, and then you'll have 2 minutes each. So let's begin with the first row. Anyone in the first row on any of the wings, if you'd come up and take one of the 3 seats. After all that, you better. All right, then somebody from the second row. Oh, you're the first row. Great. All right. If the second row, those people that want to talk, would just come to one of the center aisles so we know how many people are there, that would be great. Hello, sir.
Hey, Joe Meyer. Speaking for myself. I ask that you hold water rates steady. My rates have doubled since moving to Portland 10 years ago. And my household income has decreased. We've already cut back on the usual middle-class luxuries of the occasional night out and music lessons for the kids. And yet another increase in water rates will have real quality of life consequences. I'm not at all convinced that a rate increase is necessary. I hear that the Water Bureau is continuing to fund vacant positions. And if we got out 8, well, there's still 25 there, which doesn't seem like peanuts to me. Other bureaus are belt tightening, why not water? Also, in light of the auditor's report, critical of Water Bureau spending, and the highly contentious LT2 compliance strategy, I can't really feel confident that the Water Bureau has reasonable rates as a high priority. Another increase in rates will affect all of Portlanders, from businesses to homeless. In fact, a recent U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development study shows that 40% of evictions are due to non-payment of utilities. So if we're concerned about homelessness, let's keep water rates down. In light of the harm that will be done by another rate increase, process must be not only free of impropriety, but also the impression of impropriety. It has not been. In light of the city's wide impact of yet another rate increase, it's appropriate that the whole city council play an active role. I ask that you hold water rates steady. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Malcolm Chaddock, I'm from Solid, and I came to speak not directly about the rate increase, but about the waiver for variance that hasn't happened. My understanding is that there is, at the federal level, the possibility of getting a waiver, and this has been brought up before the council many times. I'm not quite sure why it hasn't happened, but that is the next step, I believe, and I think you should take it.
And we've pursued it many times.
Sir, that isn't good enough, sir.
The record shows, sir, that we pursued it a number of times. It's part of the reason we have gotten some of the regulatory relief that we have received.
So it has to happen, sir.
We agree with you. We wish we could make it happen. Sir.
I would like to speak to the rate increase and also the waiver. The rate increase is outrageous. It's 8%. My understanding, now that you're loaded. 8% doesn't sound like very much money, but to people that are on fixed incomes, it's a lot of money. Those people that live in apartments do not pay water. However, department owners pay the water, and their rent will increase. So you will increase the rent on people that cannot afford it. Let me speak to the waiver. The waiver has been granted to the state of New York because Senator Schumer stood before the EPA and said, no, you will not do this. And the EPA listened. This body should have contacted Senator Berkeley and Senator Wyden, and if they didn't listen, this body should have been on their doorsteps and said, get us the waiver. That's what leaders do. Leaders do not sit here and raise the water rates on people that cannot afford it and then turn around and screw up the good system that we have and then pay maybe $500 million.
Good leaders don't do that.
I want every one of you that votes today or next week on this rate increase to resign your post. That's what leaders do. They resign.
All right, next read from the second row.
I'm still first row, sir.
Come on up. Third row. While you're getting settled, I don't know how many times each of us have met repeatedly with Senator Smith, Wyden, Berkeley on this very issue, and in many ways they've been incredibly helpful and in contact with New York City and in contact with Schumer's office. So another person that wants
you to lie!
The records show what they show. You can yell as loud as you want.
You lie!
It still isn't accurate. Hi, welcome, glad you're here.
Hi, guys, thanks for having me. My name's Jesse Sponberg, I live in Selwood. I just want to come up here today and not discuss the facts of the waiver, just to ask that you guys don't give up, don't throw in the towel, don't shrug your shoulders, don't look at your feet. This is Portland, Oregon, and if New York City can get a waiver, then that means that New York City has quality leadership. And I think, I would like to say for the record, that not only do I think that you guys shrugging your shoulders and saying, well, we tried, and while at the same time fast-tracking what's going on, instead of dragging your feet, I think not only is it shameful, not only is it negligent, but I think history will say that at times it's criminal. And I would like to, without pointing my finger, look specifically at you, Mr. Leonard, and say that you should be ashamed of yourself.
He's the good-looking guy.
No, you're right. That's right.
You know what? I'm glad this is really funny to you guys, because I take this very seriously. This is the most beautiful part about Portland is our clean water. And you guys just shrug your shoulders. Yeah. And I just want to wag my fingers and say shame on you guys. Because I tell you, if it was up to any random five people in this audience, we would not be fast-tracking. We'd be dragging our feet until the very last minute. Yeah. And I just encourage you to do that. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody, citizens in Portland. My name is Nanette Jones. I reside in North Portland, Kenton neighborhood, rah-rah. And I'm here to say that I moved to Portland because of the water. We have wonderful water here, best unadulterated water in the country. And that's this, that's why I stay here. And for over 150 years, our water has been fine. We've had no cryptosporidium. So I want to talk on two issues. I don't think we need to cover our reservoirs, especially not in this tough economic times when we've been talking about laying off 100 public school teachers. There's better ways for our money to be spent. We have huge radon problems too. So covering our reservoirs is going to create a lot more problems in dangerous situations that I don't believe our city council has fully explored. The second I want to talk about, we can get a waiver. If New York can get a waiver, we should be able to get a waiver to protect our water, as well as keep it in public hands, public jobs. We do not need mega national corporations coming in and having control over Portland's water.
Yeah.
We need to keep our water in the public's hands and unadulterated. And the fact that our water rates are very high right now, and it's going to change the livability of Portland. Let alone it's water is our source of life. Our bodies are made up of 80% water. We cannot drink the Columbia River or the Willamette River water. And this building, this cleaning system will not even address the PCBs, the DDTs, the nuclear waste that Hanford puts off in our water.
Right.
This is not the age of mutation for Portland City Council. Stop it, okay? It is very, very, very dangerous to drink the Columbia River water. And Portland citizens should not have to pay 56% more to drink Superfund water.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hello, my name is Catherine Nonson, and I'm going to do a review of history. In November of 1969, the city council was told to cover its open reservoirs due to fecal material. This was after there was a joint federal and state survey done on the public water system in 1968 and 1969. This was 42 years ago. In December of 1972, the city council had passed a resolution to cover the open reservoirs over a 12-year period, which should have been completed had that gone forward by the fiscal year 1984-1985. However, that particular resolution of December 1972 was rescinded in December 1978, and yes, former Commissioner Lloyd Anderson was one of those that voted to rescind that resolution to cover our open reservoirs. Had this gone through during that point in time, and those reservoirs would have been covered one every biennium over that 12-year period. And yes, it would have been a little easier on us had that been done at that point in time. Unfortunately, the delay has now come to about 42 and a half years. We can't delay any longer than this. As far as the UV waiver is concerned, the public needs to know that it's for 10 years until cryptosporidium shows up again. We've had cryptosporidium problem in the Bull Run watershed, and that's cited in the Le Chevalier report, which was cited in the proposed and the final LT2 rule. I don't think it's worth your effort. I think to go to the congressional delegation to continue trying to hammer on the open reservoir issue when your history is against you. And for another reason is that the EPA will not be finished with its six-year review of the LT2 rule until 2016. There isn't any planned scheduled meeting on open reservoirs the next time. It's going to be on the bin classification and other more technical issues of the rule. That won't happen until the end of 2014 or 2015. Now, I don't like the rate of paying high water rates either, but I think the fact that your predecessors didn't do the job they should have done, that's part of the problem here. It's
your
not all on our shoulders. But
up.
I need the public to know this. But I have to support the increase, and I have to pay it to my rent no matter what anybody
okay.
says.
Thank you. We're in the fifth row. Anyone in the fifth row?
Fourth.
Anyone in the fourth or fifth row? Please come forward. Welcome. Just give us your name and you'll have 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop. I've been a resident on Canyon Lane in Portland for over 30 years and a member of First Congregational Church for over 25 years. And I'm here to talk about transportation fees and practices, particularly around First Congregational Church in the Park Blocks. I've been working with PCPA and city staff for the last year and trying to understand what's going on and see if there's a way to reach some accommodation with the theater about these uses. Currently what happens is that the theater puts up all day, all week, reservations around the church, and that precludes our members and guests from being able to use those spaces even if they have handicap permits. By their nature, church members will not use spaces that are reserved and appear to be violating the law. So effectively, the theater has removed those spaces almost year-round from church use, and that presents a real problem for the church.
Sir, are those spaces that are both adjacent to the park, the South Park blocks, as well as adjacent to the sidewalk next to the building?
Commissioner Fish, they are. It varies, but the standard practice is that all of the Madison Street spaces next to the church and the theaters are blocked. I did receive a message from your office earlier today that we're addressing it, and there has been some improvement. My concern is that it's a temporary change rather than a long-term one. On Sunday, I noticed a change in the practices, and instead of having all hours, all days reservations, they had date-specific and time-specific. But those reservations appeared to me to coincide with employees' work schedules. So effectively, they're still unavailable for use when employees are working at the theater, and that's the problem, I think, that still continues to occur.
So, Mayor Adams, with your concurrence, we did get a letter. We have begun a dialogue with PBOT. I think this is a problem we can work through. I would just suggest that we continue with Tom Miller's team and with Parks to see if there's a resolution. We did get your letter. We're looking into it. We appreciate you coming here.
I appreciate the attention and the opportunity.
We'll work it out the best we can.
Hi, my name is Courtney Scott. I live in Northeast Portland, and I am here to talk about the water. First of all, thank you, Amanda Fritz, for at least willing to have another meeting about this. It's very important that we discuss this much, much further. Secondly, since there seems to be a bottleneck, what you're saying at the congressional level, I was wondering if you could invite Senator Merkley here and have a teleconference perhaps with Senator Schumer in New York and find out exactly what process they followed to get a waiver and what we can do to follow suit. The water projects are unnecessary and extremely costly to the citizens of Portland. We have a very pristine and pure water system. We do not need to mess with it. Yes, as other people have mentioned, the water rates are very high already. By increasing them by 8 or 8.5% is an incredible burden on the people of Portland. So I wish to encourage you to continue dialogue about this, invite the senator, maybe he will come to a city hall meeting, and let's discuss this further and stop this needless expense.
Hi.
My name is Dawn Smallman. I'm from Mount Tabor neighborhood, and I think that she just summarized things terrifically. I would second everything she said. I would also like to thank you for all the work that you've done so far on this issue. I appreciate that there's been a tremendous amount of work, but sometimes it's just not enough. Sometimes you don't get the outcome that you want, and you have to do more work. Throughout this entire process, I have to say, coming to public meetings, I've often gotten the feeling, especially from Commissioner Leonard, that we get to an impasse and it's like, this is all we can do. This is all we can do. We can't do more. We're being told we need to do this. I think you need to fight beyond those. I know that there have been times when you have fought beyond those, but I think it's really tough to have people come here today and hear you, Mayor, say, we're at an impasse, basically, the way you said that at the beginning of the meeting. It's very difficult to say we're being forced to do this. Maybe I misunderstood you.
I didn't say those words.
Oh, it sounded like you were saying, once again, we're being mandated to do this.
No, I was telling that guy he has to let everybody else speak.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood. My apology then. So I hope that
not
you guys,
that guy, but the guy that was there.
I hope that you will continue to fight this. I think that the water and protection of the reservoirs and protection of the water is essential to life here. The increase in the water rate is outrageous to me in a place that has this much pristine water. And I would like to say, my specifics would be, I would hope that you would not include Kelly Peak construction in this budget. I would like to have you go back and make an alternative request to OHA for another extension on the reservoir project. I know you just got done doing that, and that was denied. I think you need to do it again, please. It is critical. This is really significant. Delegates, if that's something that you think will provide relief, and I'd like for more creative brainstorming from all of you who are in a much bigger position of knowledge than I am on how we solve this thing, and to keep pushing through and keep trying new ideas, new ways, talking to the same people over and over, whatever. Please don't quit. I'm here to say, please do not quit, and please do not fast track this today. Thank you.
Row number six. Welcome back. Go ahead.
Me? Okay. First of all, I want to thank Joe, I guess he's left, for making the outburst, because without him and the TV cameras present, thank you, camera people, because if there weren't TV cameras present here, I don't believe we would be allowed to speak. I called the clerk.
You would have been allowed to speak.
I called the clerk, and she said there was not public testimony today.
It's always the chair's prerogative.
So anyway, my points are that you need to work for a waiver. David Schaff told me several years ago that he would have to go to jail. And I said, well, if any of the public servants, which you always call yourself when you're running for office, went to jail for the people, we would be down there with cakes with files in them, we'd be genuflecting to you, and to save our pristine Bull Run water, I don't know what you could do better than that. You cover the reservoirs, we'll have poisonous radon coming up. You're a nurse, Amanda, you know what that does. Dan, you care about children with your initiative, you know what that does. A filter, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, what caused all this, had a filter. Isn't it amazing? People died. They had a filter. And I want to bring up the economy. And many times I've been down here, I heard Steinfield Pickle and another Portland company testify that they were being forced to move because the water rates were so high, they had to leave the area. Well, I want to ask all of you a question, because 3 years ago, Widmer Brothers Brewing Company wrote a, in my opinion, very excellent piece letter to the Oregonian, and we published it, and they were opposed to these rate increases, they were opposed to the reservoirs covered, they were opposed to a treatment plant, so was the Clinton Hotel, the Hotel Clinton, I got the president and stuff, didn't I? Anyway, the Hilton Hotel was also opposed, and after a while I never heard him speak anymore. So did you people make private deals with them? Why did the Whitmer Brothers and the Hilton Hotel, which are huge users...
In fairness, if I may, Whitmer Brothers was concerned about a particular type of treatment because they thought it would change the pH of their water. And once that treatment option was off the table, that was their primary concern.
And radon won't change.
I'm not arguing the point. I'm just saying there was a particular treatment which was going to change the pH, and a lot of the craft brew people had a concern with that, and that's the reason they engaged the issue.
And the radon didn't matter to them. Interesting.
I didn't say that. I'm just saying you asked why they are not as visible. That was the issue that they had a particular concern about.
I thought they mentioned the rates too, but I could be wrong. Thank you.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, Cherry Lambert Holstein.
Did you have more you wanted to say? Go ahead.
No, I'm through.
Oh, you're
please, okay. Please work for a waiver. You can do it. Please
okay.
Work for a waiver.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name's Brenda Merritt. I'm here representing
Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. Water rates are an equity issue. Proposed rates are too high at a time when poverty and unemployment in our community are extremely high. The following are our recommendations. Disapprove the Water Bureau's request for a 7.6 or greater rate increase. Cut some of those vacant positions in middle management and retain those necessary to maintain infrastructure and complete deferred work in the field. Disapprove funding for any activity in the bull run which can increase the risk of introduction of cryptosporidium into our reservoir. Disapprove that part of the budget which finances reservoir construction activities at Kelly Butte related to LT2, at least during the next fiscal year. Support a work session on reservoirs as requested by Commissioner Fritz. Work with the congressional delegation and the EPA leadership in DC to seek a timeout for Portland's reservoirs while the LT2 rule is under review by order of the Obama administration. I attended a day-long EPA meeting by phone and came away from that hearing on LT2 and Oakland reservoirs very hopeful that there may be positive changes in the rule made at the federal level. We have heard over and over again that day from experts that all reservoirs are not alike and heard recommendations for changes that could be made to make the LT2 rule more sensible and less of a cookie-cutter regulation. And finally, as necessary, work to secure compliance through a legislative remedy. Without strong and immediate action on the part of the City Council, these Water Bureau rate increases will likely force families to leave Portland and businesses to cut back employment or leave Portland. Ultimately, that will dramatically increase the financial burden on remaining ratepayers while degrading our quality of life. We just like to state for the record that the Hilton and Whitmer are represented by the large water users, and they are very involved and still very interested in the rates.
And is it your understanding that New York City got a waiver or a delay?
They have a delay.
Hi, welcome.
I'm Michael Morgan, and I live in Portland. I would like to ask you not to award any further Kelly Butte or Mount Tabor Reservoir burial contracts and to work with our congressional delegation to make every effort to obtain approval of a substantial delay in the water system reservoir burial projects. The motivation for doing so is that we're moving towards spending $300 or $400 million on infrastructure changes to a water system that already provides safe water based on statements by Drs. Gary Oxman at the Multnomah County Health Department and Thomas Ward at Oregon Health and Science University, and the absence of disease attributable to our drinking water for a century, the regular sampling by the Portland Water Bureau, and extensive water sampling at the reservoir outlets in 2008 and 2009, in which I read, according to the researchers, our water already met the goal of the Environmental Protection Agency LT2 rule. Furthermore, I read in a letter to our senators that the Environmental Protection Agency has not gathered national data on reservoirs, covered or uncovered, to support the LT2 rule. Furthermore, the Environmental Protection Agency is reviewing the LT2 rule, including the uncovered finished water reservoir requirements. In explaining this review, Lisa Jackson, Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, said in her August 19, 2000 letter to Senator Charles Schumer that different reservoirs around the country have different specific conditions and protections that may have a bearing on the public health benefits of the LT2 coverage requirement. And the review would reassess and analyze new data and information regarding occurrence, treatment, analytical methods, health effects, and risk from viruses, Giardia, and cryptosporidium, to evaluate whether there are new or additional ways to manage risk while assuring equivalent public health protection. And she said science will drive their ultimate decision.
So your time is up, sir. Thank you for your testimony. All right, last rows. Anyone wish to come forward? All right. This will be our last panel. Welcome back. Have a seat. Go ahead, Floyd.
Yes, Floyd Jones, representing Friends of the Reservoirs, and I'm here to address the unfortunate decision by the Oregon Health Authority that we got word of last Friday. We'd already addressed at a at the hearing last week our concerns about the vacant positions and earlier about the overall rate increase. As I stated last week, I did attend the April 24th EPA meeting to address technical and scientific issues on the open reservoirs, and it was encouraging because there was a whole team, of course, of New York scientists and representatives from New York and other utilities, as well as researchers who offered suggestions for addressing the onerous requirement that we treat or cover for problems that no one has ever documented existing. And in addition, over the last several months, we've been in conferences with congressional delegation, and specifically with Senator Merkley's office, and they are working on alternatives that aren't directly related to OHA's denial of the extension. But it's important that we go back and try and pursue that extension again and submit different arguments in support of that. You have to be aware that, of course, our approach has not been that of New York's. New York didn't submit a fast-track schedule in the first place, and that's what's got us in the bind that we're in now. They submitted a plan initially in support of pushing it out till 2028, not just because they had other projects that they had to complete before then, but in support of sound science, and they've been consistent every step of the way in 2001, submitting significant comments that were ignored by EPA initially, but Senator Schumer got involved, and that's why, you know, we are now in a situation where over the next five or more years, EPA may revise the requirements. But in the meantime, we need to not, you know, put ourselves in a position where we can't take advantage of opportunities that the congressional delegation can create for us. And pursuing Kelly Butte at this point, that's what that does. It cuts off those opportunities. So you need to work on a strategy for pushing that out.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Diane Tweeden. The reasons for taking on all this debt were stated in a recent letter as being about protecting the public. These reasons are refuted by the main consultant, Joe Glicker, in his 1998 Open Reservoir Study Technical Memorandum. Even then, he thought that logic and science would prevail and that it is likely the open reservoirs would be part of Portland's water system for the next 50 years, given a lack of specific identifiable problems and the new language of the Safe Drinking Water Act, which requires a more balancing of costs and benefits of regulations. This is a marketing story, not science, and greed masquerading as a need for public policy. The story is that we have an old system and the rate increases are about increased operating costs. Rarely mentioned is that debt service is the main reason, not operating expenses, which have increased a little over $2 million a year for the last 13 years, while debt service will have gone up seven times by 2016, resulting in a default. If more debt isn't taken on, then the cash on hand should easily avoid a rate increase at this time. A previous policy of returning surplus operating revenues as rate relief has disappeared in the bonds as of 2004. Cash is being stockpiled and is almost equal to an entire year of operating expenses. Construction loans build it and then give the debt service to water users. Only 4 to 6 miles of distribution mains are replaced a year of 2,100 miles. The Mount Tabor reservoirs could have been refurbished for $2 million, as a quote in 2002. The buried ones have shown to have cracks within 30 years. You're perpetuating the story by supporting this and further eroding public trust. This is about equity. So we are ordered to do what will send us into default, whereas the factory farms that they got their rebate. We need equity if you truly want to be public servants.
Thank you. Sarah, welcome back. Can you get closer to the mic so we can hear you?
Voice, I'm sure you can hear me. So my name is Spencer Burton. I feel strongly that the council and the mayor should step up, show some leadership on this, hold the line, get a delay. We don't need to cover these water systems. We have a beautiful, natural, clean system. Let's fight for that Let's fight for the ratepayers that cannot pay, for those that least are able to afford it. This is a time for leadership. This is the time to hold the line. This is the time for the bigger fight, to say this is wrong at the national level, and we can't just pay for a system that we don't need and don't want. I strongly recommend that you guys hold the line for the ratepayers, for the city of Portland, for our future, for our past. This is the time, folks. This is the time when you show what you got in your stomach, in your belly. This is the time to stand up for the people of Portland. The LT2 ruling is wrong, and we need to fight this. I strongly encourage you to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. The last three. Go ahead, begin.
Hi, my name is Beth Jobs Syracuse, and I've been in front of you before. I want to bring the attention to the fact that all of the projects are in-house at the Water Bureau, and they're under a lawyer. And with all water projects that are under the Water Bureau, there's no external independent oversight in that bureau. I just heard they're moving from the Salmon Run Emergency 7 permit at the South Shore, and they're going to take all that payroll and shift it over to the Powell Butte, which is a little less payroll, so they don't need as many people, so they can cut their budget. Now, I get that, because I get that, but for the rest of us, we need to get a little oversight, we need to get a little forensic accounting in there, so that we can see, so the public can see, so the city here can see what's happening. You two are gone. You guys are here. This is you. And Dan, you know all about it. You've been doing this since 2000. Calaro, I mean, Calaro was the one that was the precedence to any STLES being in there. And now we have, what, the cell towers? Good idea, bad idea. You know, I see the benefits, but so I see the bad idea about it.
I need you to testify on the issue.
I am. It's the water issue. It's the Bull Run. It's the covering these reservoirs. We know from experience that we can change these. We watched it change with the variance, although we have a lawyer that says, well, we have a variance, it's going to last 10 years, but we can still run everything in the bowl. So I have that. You know, lawyers, they like to prove themselves when they get pushed. So I have that. But anyway, so I have a bit of an idea of what's going on, but I sure would like a really big, huge idea of what's going on with this Water Bureau. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So my name is Nancy Newell. You've seen me here before on behalf of Citizens for Portland Water, which I'm here today, but also for We All Need Bees, which is a gardening and nursery organization of 300 members, and also for the Rosa Parks Association, who is opposing the rate increase and does not feel we need any water for your rate increase. Based on the conditions of the lack of water in some homes, they don't even have trickling water in the home. They have red tags on their door. Homes are being foreclosed on. Our pipes will be gone for the entire city if we continue this construction process for projects we don't need, we don't want. We want you to be strong, to get the waiver, to also act in a fashion that protects the small ratepayers. We have a large ratepayer lawsuit you're well aware of. And these kinds of activities, we have a project going on right now that I, as a citizen, spent my own money to get a lawyer, conflict of interest within our city. On the hearing process for these 7 permits for the project right now that's draining off our summer supply at our reservoir. We have aerial evidence of this happening by our Water Bureau, and there is no independent oversight to prevent a crisis this summer in this city. And this is no joke. I mean, people are not having water trickled in. That's a human right to water issue, which Maude Barlow will be in the city in 2 seconds to defend the people's human right to water. How dare this city refuse water to people that they have to go to their neighbor's house in order to get water because of prices? Shame on you. Shame on you. Our debt will be so high in 2016, and we've shown it to you. We've proven it several times. The banks will own our pipes, and that's it. Privatization will have no control over quality of water, where it comes from, and where it goes. Right now, the Great Lakes is threatened by Chinese movement of water to China. I don't know if you're aware of that. But all these things are in the budget. You are spending the money endlessly. It is a crazy circus, and it's got to stop.
I'm Catherine Howells, and I have two hats. The hat I'm wearing today is I'm on the faculty of PSU. I teach drinking water, I research drinking water, and the drinking water regulations. The other hat I have is a member of PERB. I am not representing PERB at all. I'm talking about what I've learned in my research and teaching at PSU.
So you're speaking for yourself?
I am speaking absolutely for myself. So I want to make that really clear. Drinking water is about public health. That's bottom line. That's why OHA has the authority to make these rules. And I think it's really important we put that in perspective. I don't think anyone in this room doesn't celebrate Bull Run water. It is phenomenal, the history of this system and how we protected the watershed. What I've come to realize over years of research is the single greatest source of contamination in our water supply is our open reservoirs. And any list that you can look at the annual list when they clean the reservoirs of what they take out of the reservoirs, when they drain them and they clean them, and you have full dog poop bags, you have dead animals, and my favorite, you have bowling balls. Go figure, but if bowling balls can get into the reservoirs, probably almost anything can get into the reservoirs. This actually really concerns me from a safety perspective, but also to realize that we have, that's finished water. It's already been treated. It's going directly to our houses, and we have no way, even with all the security, things still get into the reservoirs. So my concern has always been about the public health for all citizens of Portland, and actually even the wholesale customers. Thank you.
All right, thank you all. I need to take we're going to take a 5-minute compassion break, and then return. We'll return for further discussion.
One more.
You guys, you can yell as loud as you want. This is the last person to testify.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
My name is Scott Fernandez. A decade ago, I wrote the first science paper that challenged the EPA regulation based on their unsound science. And for the last decade, I've produced many, many scientific papers that support the fact that the EPA LD2 regulation is not needed because there's no scientific basis for it. And I cannot let the last voice be heard to say that the open reservoirs are the greatest source of contamination. They are the best things that we have in the system because it provides a barrier of chemicals and gases that would otherwise get into our homes and workplaces and schools. There is nothing about the EPA LT2 regulation that the EPA has proposed as being a public health benefit. Not one of those things that they proposed has come true.
Not one
over this whole time. The EPA was wrong in this LT2 regulation. It is based on sewage exposure in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that we don't have in our source water, and we have not seen any public health problems within our system for over 100 years. When we look at the scientific evidence of our open reservoirs, we found no cryptosporidium. We found no viruses, we found no other parasites, and over the last decade, the OHA water sampling throughout our system has found fewer than 5 alleged E. coli out of tens of thousands of samples, and that includes the reservoirs. The water system of the Bull Run is one of the most sustainable and most effective and most pure system that this country has ever seen, and we need to keep it as it is. We want a waiver, which is not a variance. And we want a waiver requested to the delegation to be put forth to the EPA. And we want it done very, very soon. We want a waiver which exempts us from the LT2 regulation.
Yep.
So that I wanted to make sure I understood, and we are going to take a break. I don't think I heard you right, but did you mean to say that the open reservoir portion of our overall system is the best part of the system?
Absolutely, because it lets... gases and the radon and chloroform vent harmlessly.
All right, I just wanted to make sure I understood you correctly.
The sunlight does an effective job of disinfection and breaking down.
No, I heard you. I just want to make sure I got it right. All right, we're going to take a 5-minute break.
Thank you. Woo.